Welcome to More in the Word, a podcast of More Theological College in Sydney, Australia, that seeks to glorify God through biblically sound, thought-provoking, and challenging talks and interviews. In this episode, from an elective at the 2025 Priscilla and Aquila Center Annual Conference held on Monday, the 3rd of February, 2025, Dr. Kath Bruce, a GP, speaks about the medical side of menopause, and Kathy Young, pastor at St. David's Anglican Church in Forestville, Sydney, speaks about the ministry implications of menopause. Kath and Kathy remind us that understanding perimenopause and menopause will help us understand many of the women in our churches and many of the women we are seeking to reach with the gospel. Even if you're not a woman, let me encourage you to listen to Kath and Kathy's talks, particularly if you are involved in pastoral ministry. Please note, the book Kath Bruce refers to at the end of her talk is Pause, How to Enjoy God, Find Hope, and Bear Fruit Through Midlife and the Menopause by Sarah Allen. Also, this episode is a companion piece to last week's bonus episode with Kate Snell on the theology of menopause. If you have not heard that one, I encourage you to go back and listen. We hope you find both episodes helpful.
So I'm going to talk mostly about the medical background behind menopause. So it's going to be a little bit technical. You don't need to remember everything. There will not be a test at the end. It's just so you get a bit of a concept of what's actually happening in the body. I think that's quite important. And a little bit about treatment at the end, just to think through how that works from a medical point of view. And as I said, Kathy's going to talk a lot more about what that actually means for a person in that more functional way. Is that the right word? Anyway. Let's go. I've got slides because I like pictures and I need to keep myself on track or I'll talk forever. So basically this talk is kind of what I would say to women when they come in and they have questions about menopause. This is what I would sort of go through. Hopefully it will make sense. Ask questions if it doesn't. All right. So the first thing to say is menopause is a natural transition. It's not something we need to cure. It's not something that is not ever going to happen to people. It's a natural transition as part of a woman's life. And as such, we can expect that every woman will go through menopause. It's going to look very different, but it is a normal transition. And so therefore, if people look different, it's not a one-size-fits-all because we're not curing something, if that makes sense. So it's a change of mindset for a lot of other medical conditions. So the traditional clinical diagnosis is no periods for 12 months, and that's based really on contraception. If you haven't had a period for 12 months, there's a minuscule chance that you'll ovulate and therefore you can't fall pregnant. So that's kind of why that definition is there. If we look at the blood tests, and I'll come to what the letters mean, it's the FSH being elevated twice. So because periods are cyclical, you want to make sure you catch two lots of the cycle 4 to 6 weeks apart. Just so you know, there is also surgical menopause that can happen at any time when your ovaries are removed for whatever reason. Both of them would have to be removed, and that puts you into surgical menopause at whatever age, and that does impact on treatment. Most of the time, 45 to 55 is normal for menopause. Early is 40 to 45, so a lot of women think that that's premature menopause. It's actually called early menopause. So you can stop having your periods at 40. And that's normal, kind of, it's early, but it's normal. And premature ovarian insufficiency, which means that sort of early menopause that has other medical implications before 40. So it's a little bit earlier than some people think, but they're generally 45 to 55. Perimenopause is actually the one that everyone's worried about. That's where you get your symptoms. After menopause, less symptoms, not none, less symptoms. But perimenopause is the time between the onset of symptoms to 12 months after the last period. So getting to that 12-month menopause, perimenopause, from the time the symptoms start, no matter what those symptoms are. The average is 4 to 8 years. So if we're thinking early menopause can be 40, we can be talking 32. Now, that's very rare, but it can be, once again, earlier than people think. So 4 to 8 years is average. 10 to 20% of women go up to 12 years. And I do have one lady who was in her 90s who would still occasionally ask for an estrogen patch because she was just having some funny symptoms and because she was 90. And we talked about the risk factors. That was fine. Although it's not really supposed to be how you do things. Anyway, reality is not always the same as what the textbook says. Normal hormones. Once again, don't need to remember this. The basis of the change in menopause is that women are born with all of the eggs they will ever have. So men make sperm, women don't make eggs after they're born. You're born with all of them. At some point, they're going to run out. And the last bunch are not going to be great because they only have a certain life expectancy. So that's why, biologically speaking, we go through menopause. All right. Pituitary is a little stem at the bottom of your brain. It produces all of the messenger hormones. So the growth hormone and thyroid stimulating hormone and lots of other hormones, messengers that go to parts of the body and say, make these hormones. It has a really tight feedback loop. And so if the hormones out in the periphery don't get made, that message comes back to the pituitary and we make more of the messenger hormones. So FSH, follicle stimulating hormone, selects follicles. LH is involved in maturing the eggs. They work on the ovary. The ovary makes estrogen and progesterone. So if the ovary is not ovulating and producing the estrogen and progesterone, we're going to get that feedback up to the pituitary. We're going to make more of the FSH, going back to the definition we talked about before. Okay, if we look at the ovary, this is just so you've got some concept of what these words are and what they mean. So the follicle stimulating hormone selects the follicle with the egg inside. The luteinizing hormone works on maturing it. Estrogen is made by both that follicle that is maturing the egg, but also by some of the cells within the ovary itself. Then we get the egg released off to the uterus, and then the follicle that was maturing it, called the corpus luteum, produces the progesterone. So all of those stages are necessary for a normal cycle. If you disrupt any of those, you're not going to get a normal cycle. God is very cool and he makes things work really well, but they're quite specific. So all these things need to happen to get a normal cycle. So if any of these are disrupted, you're going to get a funny cycle. Okay, so menopause, particularly decreased progesterone, increased FSH. Your estrogen's going to go all over the place and we'll get to that in a second and get that FSH definition there. Okay, so in the ovary, you're going to have a lower number and quality of eggs. You're going to have cycles with no eggs released as well. So you're not going to get the estrogen produced in the same way. You're also not going to get the corpus luteum the same. So you can see that one thing not happening means that lots of other things don't happen, and that has clinical effects. Yeah, disrupts the whole cycle there. So the other thing that happens if you have the cycles with no eggs released, sometimes you won't get a period. So we're now getting into the symptoms. So if you don't get an egg released, you're not going to get a period. So when people are going into perimenopause, they often miss cycles. That's often the first thing that happens symptomatically that they come to see me about. So I've missed a few cycles. They're a bit irregular, or they're longer because they're not ovulating at the same time, because they're not having this maturation happen according to the way it should. And so they're having really uneven cycles. And you can also have really heavy cycles as well, because you don't have the normal hormonal pattern, so you don't have the signals that tell your body to stop bleeding now. So you can have much heavier cycles as well. So the whole thing doesn't work very well. All right. Estrogen is also produced in other places of the body. Now, this just means that these are all the different places that can be impacted by the decrease in estrogen. Testicles are not really an issue for today's talk, but I put it in because it's true. Lots of things, right? Liver, fat, we have difference in weight distribution. Breast, that's the breast cancer risk. Bone osteoporosis, blood vessels increase in heart disease. Brain, we've got some of the cognitive things. Skin, we get wrinkles. Immune system, autoimmune stuff can flare up. That's just a quick list. Anyway, going on to symptoms a little bit, because that's what people are really interested in. Which symptoms can be attributed to menopause? Which symptoms are just us getting older? So these are all from the Australian Menopause Society website. It's a fantastic website if you're looking for information. And they have a checklist and it's really long. Then there's a picture one. It's kind of the same thing. But if you look at the top, you've got your hot flushes, lightheaded feelings, which can be related to hot flushes, but not always. Headaches, irritability, depression, unloved feelings. So all these things that are kind of part of the same thing, but they're slight variations, right? Anxiety, mood changes, sleeplessness, tiredness. I can read it down here. Sorry, backache, joint pains, muscle pains. Joint pains is a really interesting one, which is related to the collagen. So estrogen is really important in collagen formation, and that is basically all of your connective tissues. So joints have connective tissues. You also have connective tissues in your skin. That's one of the reasons we get more wrinkles after menopause. You also have connective tissues around your bladder. So that's involved in some of the bladder changes and urinary pattern changes. You also have a lot of collagen in your vagina. So that's your dryness. So there's lots of things that are impacted by just that one, by collagen, that's impacted by estrogen. So the effects of not enough estrogen are very wide ranging. And some people are going to get all of those symptoms. Some people are going to get three of those symptoms. Some people are going to get none of those symptoms. So I had a lady come into me the other day and said, should I be on HRT? And I looked at her age and went, you're 52. Are you still having periods? And she said, nah. I said, when was your last one? 3 years ago. So do you have any other symptoms? No. I said, well, why would you go on HRT? And she said, oh, my friends are. It's about managing the symptoms. It's not about treating something. And for some women, that's very different than for other women. All right. So I've got another list of symptoms here, but actually, as I thought about it, I added way more symptoms to this list. But, your main ones are your hot flashes, irritability, brain fog, insomnia. You would have heard in the last talks, a lot of women think they're getting dementia or have a brain tumour and they're just going through perimenopause. That's really common because it comes out of nowhere. You're kind of in the middle of doing things, your busy life, you're working, blah, 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 and suddenly you're forgetting people's names. And that can be really scary. So that's a big one that people come in and talk about. Weight gain is another one that I should have had up there. Your metabolism slows down. That's one of the impacts of reduced progesterone and estrogen. And your weight distribution changes. You get more weight around the middle here, which is the bad metabolically active weight, and less weight on the hips, which is actually good metabolically active fat. So it's not even necessarily that there's more weight. It's just in a bad spot. So lots of changes there. Less common joint pain, gut symptoms, and autoimmune diseases. Because estrogen can impact on your immune system, if you have an autoimmune condition, and there's many of them, that can get worse during menopause, purely because of the hormone effect, not because of the age effect. There's also heart disease increases. So estrogen is really important in, once again, because of the collagen in your blood vessels. And in fact, after menopause, women's heart disease reaches the same as what men's heart disease is. So it's a massive escalation and then we sit the same. So that can be a big deal for people as well. Osteoporosis is another one. Estrogen's really important in bone formation. Estrogen is really important in bone formation. And so if you don't have that, you're at risk of getting osteoporosis. So there are a couple of patients I have whose cardiologist or endocrinologist has kept them on HRT longer than they would normally be because of their risk of either heart disease or osteoporosis. It's not an accepted treatment for those things, but they're certainly really important in those diseases going forward. The other thing to point out is a lot of these symptoms are really multifactorial. So I thought I'd just look at anxiety as an example, anxiety and irritability. So you're in the sandwich years, as I call them. Your kids are teenagers and they need you and they're going through emotional dramas. Your parents are getting older and they need you and they need help and you're stuck in the middle. And it's those sandwich years of having to deal with both, plus do your own thing, work, do all those other things that are expected of you. You're not sleeping properly, which is also multifactorial. That can also be due to hot flushes and other things as well, but you don't sleep as well during perimenopause anyway. That's going to make your anxiety worse. With menopause, your anxiety is going to get worse anyway, so it's just an estrogen effect. You've got brain fog. You're not as sharp as you used to be. You're forgetting things. That's going to make you anxious as well. And these strange symptoms keep popping up, these joint pains, these strange aches, odd things with having to go to the toilet all the time when you used to not. These things can make you really anxious. So there's lots of reasons. Most of these things kind of all impact on each other as well. So it can be really tricky to tease apart what actually is the problem, particularly when we come to treatment. So treatment, it's about the symptoms. So because menopause, as I said at the beginning, is a natural transition, we want to treat the symptoms. So everyone's menopause therapy is going to look completely different depending on what their symptoms are. I'm not going to give the lady with no symptoms HRT and potentially give a teeny increased risk of blood clots, which is not really a problem if you've got symptoms that you need to control. But if you don't need them, why would you do that? And I'll go on to the risks in a second. So I've just listed a few things there. I've added a couple of things on to my list down here as well. So MHT is what HRT used to be, menopause hormonal treatment rather than hormonal replacement treatment. Don't ask me why, but it's changed. So you can go for the hormones. That works for a lot of women. You replace a little bit of the estrogen and progesterone and settle things down. An SSRI, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, an antidepressant. If anxiety is your major issue, maybe a small dose of SSRI will work really well. It's really good for premenstrual retention, the really short dose. Also, it's going to help with your hot flushes. So if you don't want hormones, so some people are more sensitive to hormones and they have a lot of those mood swings, you might just use a little bit, a really low dose of an SSRI. It's going to help with your irritability, going to help with hot flushes if they're your problems. There's lots of herbal products. So Remifemin or Black Cohosh, classic example, fantastic, work really well. Non-hormonal, don't interfere with a whole bunch of stuff. Don't want to use it if you've got liver disease. But apart from that, it's really helpful. Not as good at dealing with hot flushes as other things, but works quite well. Psychologist. If you're really not coping, no matter what else you do, you might want to see a psychologist. It's really helpful to have talk therapy. And I just think while we're destigmatizing menopause, let's destigmatize seeing a psychologist. It's a great thing to do. Gabapentin's another nerve medication, good for hot flushes. Something as basic as a handheld fan can be really helpful. So all I'm trying to do here is say there's lots of options depending on what you need. Tibolone's another medication that you might use if people are having hot flushes and you don't want to give them hormones for whatever reason. Or if someone's in perimenopause, so they're before 50, you can just give them the pill. It's a nice high dose of hormones, perfectly safe, works really well. So it depends on where people are at. There is some therapy with testosterone that's coming as well, because often that can be low also. That's really only under the PBS for libido issues, but that's also something you can use if that's more of a problem. You also might want to just treat someone's bleeding if they've got heavy bleeding. So you might just want to give them some Nurofen or Ponstan, or you might want to suggest, you know, another medication that will help with the bleeding if that's what the problem is. Or there are some women who end up through perimenopause needing a hysterectomy because their bleeding is just so heavy, they're losing so much iron, they can't manage. And so I've got a number of patients who've needed to go down that route as well. And it does, as you've seen as well, it does change between perimenopause and menopause. It's not static. So you're going to use your oral contraceptive pill until you're 50. And then your risk factors are too high at magic number of 50. Anyway, that's how it is. And then we switch over to using something else. All right. There's lots of things to think about. I'm just going to talk about hormone therapy for a little bit. It's one that people often have questions about. These are just a bunch of different considerations. So if someone's still having a little bit of bleeding, you might want to use a cyclical, so more like a pill. So give them the break so they have their bleed then rather than spotting all the time. Or if they're not bleeding, you might want to use the continuous, which is all the time exactly the same. PBS or non-PBS, how much money do they have? Some of the really good gel treatments, estrogen treatments, are quite expensive. And so that's also a consideration. So that's the dermal, so through the skin. It's a much safer way to use estrogen if people are worried about things like breast cancer and clots and things like that. So someone with breast cancer, you don't want to use any estrogen. Anyway, there's other considerations as well. Estrogen is the main one that causes the symptoms, particularly with hot flushes, but if you use just estrogen, you increase the risk of uterine cancer, so you need to use estrogen and progesterone. Anyway, there's a whole lot of things that you want to work through, and as I said before, everyone's treatment options are going to look different, and you're only going to use it for like 5 years. Safe to use for 5 to 10 years, so you're not going to use it for the rest of their life because you're just getting them through that transition. But the estrogen is still going up and down depending on what else is going on, and then they'll settle down. This slide you don't need to read was just really to remind me to talk about the dosages. So if we look at the MHT, the estrogen dose is between 0.5 and 2 milligrams. If we look at the contraceptive pill, it's 15 to 30 milligrams. So it's much, much lower. And so you don't have the same safety concerns. So, for example, women who have migraine can't use the pill, they can use MHT, it's fine. So just lots of differences. They're the same with progesterone. Okay, quick safety. I love this slide. It's fantastic. Everyone's worried about safety. There was a trial called the WHI trial when they release about the safety of HRT, which they produced some of the data in 2002, which was not properly, they hadn't allowed for different variables. Everyone stopped using HRT because they showed all these horrendous increased amounts of breast cancer. It was really high doses of estrogen. It was people who'd been on it for 20 years. And a lot of the women who were overweight and smoked were the ones who actually got the breast cancer, not necessarily the ones who were on the hormone therapy. Anyway, this is the latest data we have. So it's UK data. But for 1,000 women over 5 years, 23 will be diagnosed with breast cancer, so baseline, out of the population. If you put them on HRT, you'd get an extra 4 cases. If you put them on estrogen only, which you can only do if they don't have a uterus, you have 4 less. If you've got them on the pill, which a lot of the women are, you're going to have 4 cases anyway, so it's about the same. If you drink more than 2 units of alcohol per day, so it's 2 standard drinks, you'll have 5 extra cases, so more than if you used HRT. So people panic about stuff that they shouldn't be panicking about. They should be more worried about that. 3 for smokers and people who are overweight, 24. So HRT is way safer than we thought it was. I just want to say that because I want everyone to be okay with taking hormone therapy. If they need to take hormone therapy, it's good and it's safe. I can talk more about that later if people have specific questions. I'm not an ethicist. I'm a GP, but I just wanted to put this up just to think about the ethics because there's a lot of, you know, people get worried about using hormones and what are the ethical concerns and what changes are we making and all that kind of stuff. It's just a transition. We're only using it 5-10 years. We're not putting someone on hormones forever. We're treating each person as an individual. So sometimes it's worth the extra risk of breast cancer to stop someone being so anxious that they can't leave the house. It's risk versus benefits. What you do with all of your treatment is exactly the same with this. There's no contraceptive effects of MIHT, so you can't use it too early, or you technically, someone could conceive while they're on it. It doesn't stop you ovulating. It just bumps up a little bit of that estrogen and progesterone to get rid of some of those symptoms. And if you look at the blood levels, they're lower anyway. So, yeah, all right. These are my resources. I just wanted to put them up there because I didn't actually ask for permission to go there. Menopause, if you want information for people, this is a good slide to take a copy of. Menopause.org.au has some really good health information. It's the Australian New Zealand Menopause Society. It has good consumer information. It's not just for doctors. Jean Howes Foundation, anything to do with women's health, Jean Howes Foundation is excellent. They're a Melbourne-based group. And this one down here, Firm Hormones, is where I got a bunch of those tables for the UK data and a lot of the safety data. They've got lots of really good information as well. So if you want some medical information, they're really good places to go rather than just putting something into Google because you'll get who knows what. I would definitely recommend them. And I wanted to put up a book recommendation, which I haven't read. Lots of people have told me it's a really good book, so I'm going to read. I'm sure that I'm getting lots of nodding. So apparently it's a very good book. I need to read it. But it seems to be quite a sensible book written by a Christian about menopause. So if you're looking for something with a bit more detail, have a look at that. That's me done.
Yeah, hi. Thanks so much, Kath. That was very helpful. Yeah, it is an unusual topic, isn't it? A couple of years ago, I was chatting with Jane Tuer, and she said, oh, I think we should have some seminars on menopause at P&A. I said, oh, Jane, that is a fantastic idea. And then she said, do you want to speak on it? And I said, absolutely not. Anyway, I'm here and, look, it is a great privilege to be here. And it has been, well, it's actually been kind of fun preparing for it, which I didn't think. But it's a really important subject, isn't it? I was chatting to a GP friend of mine and he said that he's had numerous women say to him, I'm going crazy. I'm really going crazy. Or I feel like I don't know who I am anymore, or I'm not feeling like myself. And a couple of people said, I don't know if I love my husband anymore. I don't want to be married. So there's a whole lot of questions and uncertainty around perimenopause and menopause. It's real, as Kath has said, the duration can be quite long. And I mean, a lot of people have it for about 10 years. And as Kath said, it can actually go on for a number of years. Poor John, who works with me, knows that I forget
who I'm praying for in our prayer times at our staff meetings. Like, you know, sometimes you just forget names and it is actually embarrassing, but they just laugh at me now. So, or they laugh with me. So that's a good thing. But menopause, it affects family, it affects friendship, it affects church, it affects work relationships, it affects ministry. Very soon I'm going to introduce Kelly. She's going to come up, but not yet. I decided as part of the preparation for this that I would interview or survey a whole lot of women. So I sent out 13 questions to a whole lot of people that I know, and I got them to send questions to others because I wanted to get a feel for what's on the ground, what's actually happening with people that are going through menopause. So I asked the first six questions: how would you rate the impact of menopause? How old are you? What has your experience of menopause been? What have your symptoms been? How have you felt as you've traversed these symptoms? How long did it take you to see a GP? Kath said, go and see a GP. How long did it take you to see them? And these are the symptoms that people said that they had. So night sweats, sleep disorders, hot flushes, irritability. Kath talked about a lot of these. And one thing that Kath mentioned was that women have hysterectomies, and I know four women who have had hysterectomies because of excessive bleeding, and that has a huge impact on even just day-to-day living, let alone ministry in a church or ministering to your family, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a huge impact that menopause can actually have, not on everyone, but every, you know. So I asked in the first question, I said, how would you rate the impact of these women? So there were 32 women that I got surveys back from, and you can see that 37.5% said it had a significant impact and 31.25% said it had a moderate impact. Now, this is just the women that I surveyed, so it's not a PhD or anything like that. However, if you put those numbers together, that's 68.75% of women that have been significantly or moderately impacted. So that's about 70% of women that were surveyed. And if you think of the number of, say, 40 to 55-year-old people in your church and 70% of them, I mean, I know it's not completely accurate, but about 70% of them are going through all of these symptoms, that's a lot of women that are dealing with a lot of things. And if you think about just here's the percentages of what women went through, 62.5% of women struggled with sleep disorders. Now, I'm sure a number of you know what sleep deprivation is like. It's horrible. It's terrible. Women experiencing brain fog, 59.38%. 62.5% of women have gained weight. I'm telling you these things because I'm going to get to ministry consideration in just a little bit. But gaining weight brings on other health issues as well as financial issues because you need to go and get a whole new wardrobe. I mean, for some women that might be fantastic, but for most women, like, you know, it's a pain, isn't it, to have to go and get a whole new wardrobe. And then 46.88, almost 50% of women experience anxiety. And that can be really confusing for women who have been, generally speaking, very competent and confident. And then all of a sudden they're really anxious and they just don't know what's going on. So menopause has a huge impact. In terms of how long it takes women to go and see a GP, well, 40% of women, it took them 6 months to a year. And then you've got 26.67% takes 1 to 2 years. If you add those up, or if you add all of those up after 6 months, you've got 83.27% of women who took 6 months or more to go and see a GP, which means 6 months is actually a long time to feel like you're going mad or to feel like I'm really itchy and I don't know what to do with this, or I have excessive sweating, or I wake up in the middle of the night and I just can't get to sleep. So that is a long time for people to endure that. And having to endure that often leads to other issues. So from the question, how have you traversed menopause? Here are some answers. It's been brutal.
I've been short-tempered and hostile. It's been very challenging. It's been embarrassing, socially isolating, frustrating. I've felt misunderstood. I've been sad and grieving the loss of my more energetic, clear-thinking self. It's been a roller coaster ride, but not a fun one. I've been surviving, not thriving. It's been stressful. I've felt very alone. So to say something is brutal is actually quite powerful, isn't it? And so I think it's wonderful that we're actually bringing to the open menopause and how it affects women. So, Kel, now I can invite you up. We're going to meet Kel. If you haven't met her, she's been in Japan for 16 years as a missionary, and she actually did a master's subject which incorporated menopause as well. And she did a seminar called Can You Still Do Student Ministry When You Are Middle-Aged and Menopausal? So, Kel, why did you do that seminar?
So that was at a CMS Coastal Mission Day.
Yeah.
That was the title because they asked me for a title. I'm like, well, that pretty much sums up my last 3 years on the mission field. The question I've been asking, can I still be involved in student ministry, even though I'm not really sure about that anymore.
So how long did it take you to work out that you were getting menopausal or being perimenopausal?
I think, so I have, a fairly interesting gynecological history. So it's never been simple. For those of you who don't know, I'm single, I've never been married, never had children, but I had an ovarian tumour when I was 19 and had that removed, so I only have one ovary. But also at 25, I was diagnosed with endometriosis, so I've been treated for that with the pill since I was 25. Then 3 years ago when I was back in Australia, my gynecologist said, at your age, we probably should take the pill back because I was taking the high dose, and that basically set it all off. So it felt like a very sudden onset. I think hopefully most people get much more slow. But it did take me probably at least 6 months to work out that's what it was. I live in a foreign country. I speak a foreign language. So the fact that I forgot people's names and couldn't remember words was pretty normal. Although since I've started MHT, I can remember people's names.
Yay.
Not everybody, but I'm getting better. I can at least work out where I know them from. And I think one of the things that people have been talking about today, I'm not sure that brain fog describes exactly what I've felt. I stand there, I know what the person has just said to me, and there's just a blank, like there's nothing in my brain, even though I know that I know the answer. And in Japan, often people are very kind and they'll say, oh, but what is that in English? And I'm like, it's not a Japanese problem. It's just there's nothing. And
well, you can hide it well. That's great. That's awesome.
You can pretend it's something else. But, so that's been really challenging because generally my Japanese is pretty good. And just to be able to not remember a person's name or a word or even just get asked a question and then within the time that I'm thinking of the answer, I've forgotten what the question was. And that's really embarrassing. So all those kind of things, implications,
So thinking in terms of ministry implications, how has it affected? So obviously forgetting people's names and things like that. Are there other ways that it's affected you?
Yeah. So although I don't have children, I work with a lot of 17 to 20-year-olds. And so probably some of the frustrations those of you who have older teenagers or young adults have, I experienced that on a largest basis because I have about 20 of them. And so just my level of patience. So I've been doing the same job for 13 years. And I think, in the last 2 or 3 years, my ability to hear the same questions, to have them ask me something, I give them my advice and then they completely ignore it. And just to be okay with that. So when Paul this morning was talking about being a grumpy old man, I thought, I'm a grumpy old woman, especially in the last 3 years, I think. And those feelings of being invisible, unappreciated, and just I think all the stresses of normal life, my ability to cope with or inability to cope with them has been increased. So, I'm usually, I used to be a fairly kind of stable emotionally person, don't really get all crazy and stuff, but there have been some serious times when the things that used to annoy me a little bit just make me want to kind of rip somebody's head off. So those hormonal emotions, people are laughing, they understand.
That's right.
But then like having those very strong anger and emotions, but then the kind of downside of that is just feeling so bad that I felt that way, particularly as a Christian, and then just wanting to crawl into a hole and disappear. And so that kind of balancing that with trying to do life and work and living in a foreign country and juggling cultural differences, and yeah, it's been pretty crazy.
Yeah. Kel, obviously it's helpful for pastors to know how to work with female staff, but also how to pastor their congregations well. What do you think they need to know that would help them minister to people better?
Yeah. I mean, I think the big one is be kind. So if a woman comes at you in a way that she wouldn't have done in the past, maybe think, oh, maybe there's something going on. Don't take it personally. That's probably not just for pastors. Being kind. That probably goes, I presume, for husbands as well, not just pastors. But like, yeah, we've been talking about today is there's a big percentage of the women in our churches who are going to have some form of the challenges to go with perimenopause and menopause. And so just being okay if they say, well, actually, I need to step down from this ministry because I'm just exhausted, or like sleep, not sleeping. So when things were really bad, I was waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning and couldn't get back to sleep. And so, as you know, Kath, I like my sleep and I've always been good at sleeping. And so for me, that's been huge. And then, of course, the amount that you can cope with when you're sleep deprived diminishes and things, it just ends up in being a cycle. So I guess just maybe thinking about, okay, what else is going on? How can I be helpful and supportive?
And you did that subject which involved menopause. Are there some helpful books or articles that you could recommend for us in terms of further reading?
So I'm really excited about that book that Kath just mentioned because it came out after I did all my essays. I was actually really surprised that in the Christian space there was nothing. So my subject was actually biblical counselling, and I did the biblical counselling and physiology, and I did the essays on perimenopause. And even somewhere like CCEF, the Christian counselling website, had two articles on menopause written in the 80s, and they were actually more to do with depression and anxiety, which obviously has to do with it, but they didn't, like, it wasn't a holistic thing. And so I was pretty sad about that. So I'm very excited about this book. But in the secular space, I think the book that I found really helpful, it was called The Menopause Brain by Dr. Lisa Marsconi. And just seeing, like Kath's been talking about, just the way that our hormones just affect everything in our body, and particularly our brain. Like, she talks about it being like it's rewiring our brain. And the good news from that book and the conclusion is that actually most of that will come back. So I was like, yes, good. It's not forever. But I know that that can be, for some people, that can be a challenge forever. But, yeah, I just found that really helpful, thinking actually it's more than just periods and ovaries and stuff. It's actually like the whole of our bodies and particularly our brains as well. So,
thank you, Kel. Well, thanks. Cool. Thanks for being brave and for coming up. At the last menopause seminar, Kate, I think, mentioned the book called A Brief Theology of Periods. I haven't read that, but it does sound interesting, doesn't it? But it does have a chapter on menopause, so that might be a helpful book as well if you're thinking about reading something else. The remaining questions that I asked on my survey, and this kind of shows how things have impacted people, was, how has this impacted your relationships? And if you have a spouse, how has it impacted intimacy? How have these symptoms impacted ministries that you've been involved in? What's been helpful from your church and in particular the pastoral staff as you've navigated this? What would have been helpful from church? What's the best advice you can give to people, and anything else that couldn't fit on the slide? But I will read you some of the feedback because I think this is actually really helpful.
So in terms of impacts on relationships and spouses, so many people, well, the first person said that her husband encouraged her to see a doctor because she was irritable and not coping. And my girlfriend's a GP and she said she often gets flowers from husbands because they've been sent home with HRT or M, whatever it's called now, and they're so much happier again. So, yes. So her husband encouraged her. Someone said that it completely changed the way that they related and she needed time out because of her mood swings. Lots of people said that they were really moody with their husbands and their children. They're not nearly as hospitable as they used to be. Heavy and long bleeding impacted intimacy. Vaginal dryness is a huge issue for a lot of people. Lack of sexual desire. And obviously that's not going to be helpful. No interest in intimacy, and then guilt for not fulfilling their partner's needs. So it's not just that intimacy is affected, but then there's a guilt associated with that because they're wanting to love their husband, but they're not wanting to love their husband. And so, you know, that's actually quite difficult. And then anxiety is constant. So there's a huge impact for many women in terms of their relationship with their spouse. In terms of ministries, a number of people had to step down from upfront ministries because of brain fog, because of feeling less confident, because of feeling anxious, whereas previously they hadn't felt anxious or unable to be upfront. A number of people said they can't remember names. I'm not the only one. But that's not good for welcoming. If you're in the welcoming team, that's a little bit tricky if you're forgetting names all the time. Not so good for pastoral care. Some people had to step back because they just felt overwhelmed. So anxiety had kicked in and they just had to step back. Someone in ministry dropped down from full-time to 4 days, and I have a friend who actually was doing full-time and she stepped right back from paid ministry because she just couldn't cope anymore. It was just too much. People feel fatigued, their plate is overflowing, there's nothing to give. And they just weren't able to attend meetings all the time. So there's actually huge impacts on ministry in the church. What was helpful from church? Well, lots of people said nothing. Nothing was helpful. Someone said, I've been at this church for 30 years and they've never, ever heard anything on menopause, which I can understand that. But still, like, I guess if this is a natural transition for women, then it is actually helpful at some stage for us to be helping our women navigate godliness through this transition. And also if people are married, helping their husbands help the women navigate, but also educating pastors so that they know what's going on and they're going to, as Kelly has said, be kind and patient. Yeah. But what has been helpful, someone said that one of the assistant ministers' wives was openly talking about that stage of life and then she felt that she wasn't as alone and that she had a safe space to talk. So I think an openness is really helpful. And then obviously faithful Bible teaching at church and supportive women has been helpful. What would have been helpful? And this is where I love how God's word is just so true and transcends all times. We looked at it this morning, but they said it would be great to have older women to be talking to you. So you think about the Titus 2 in terms of older women training younger women how to love their husbands and children. That fits right into this topic, doesn't it? Like that is quite exciting, I think. And so older women mentors or women's groups, they talked about maybe having a session for men in the church on this just so that there's an awareness, having compassion from the staff. Someone actually said, I thought this was quite helpful, a reduction in the pressure to continue serving as normal. In my case, caring for a dying parent and grieving that parent as they were dying, grieving that their children are now in high school rather than in primary school, and then completely sleep deprived. So all of those things that Kath talked about, the sandwich years, it really is the sandwich years. What else would be helpful is having reliable resources to go to and perhaps getting others to step up and help with responsibilities. So being free to step down from things and having others in the church step up.
What's the best advice to women? You're not alone. Help is available. Exercise, good diet, rest, meet with women, be honest with your husband. It was great to read through all the answers. It's rough. Invest in self-care. Don't give up. God's grace will help you endure. Don't suffer in silence. Chat with others. See a GP early or a counsellor or psychologist. And I loved this one. This too shall pass. Lose youthfulness but gain wisdom and elegance. And I thought that was fantastic. Yes, the youthfulness might be going, but the gaining of wisdom, what a blessing that is. Best advice to pastors? Again, be understanding and compassionate, be informed and empathetic, read New Menopause or The Menopause Brain, be sensitive, care for husbands as husbands care for their wives. And I think that's actually a really important one, that we actually educate the husbands. And I'll come back to that in terms of ministry considerations too. Okay, so with all of that information, so where do we go to? Well, and there aren't many pastors here, but I don't think, sorry, not many male pastors here, but that's okay. But I was thinking in terms of male pastors, for ministry wives, it's really important that the pastors love their wives well through this stage of life. 1 Peter 3, husbands, love your wives in an understanding way, showing honour to the women as the weaker vessel. And I think part of the weaker vessel is actually having to negotiate all these physical changes. From age 11 to 12, right through, women are negotiating a lot of physical changes. And I think if the pastor is loving his wife well and caring for her, obviously that's a good and godly thing, but he's also modelling that to all of the men in the church as well. And if you're a ministry wife, it's important for you to self-care and take HRT if you need to, get the help you need, eat well, exercise, rest, don't put too much pressure on yourself. It's really important to care. We're at different stages of life and we need to be wise in what we take on and what we say no to. In terms of ministry in staff, ministry of women on staff, I think keep evaluating and tracking where you're up to and be honest with your senior pastor. So you might be totally fine. You might be totally fine. You might be like my girlfriend who actually had to step down for a period of time from full-time paid ministry because she just wasn't able to cope with the demands anymore. You might be someone that would like to step down for a day, or you might be totally fine and that's okay. But I think just keep reassessing and just keep trusting that God knows you, cares for you, sees you, and he'll look after you. And so our identity obviously is not in what we do. Our identity is in the Lord. And so we can trust that at the different stages of life, we get our identity from the Lord. And again, if you're a pastor of woman on staff, love your sister well. Women in the church. These are just a few ideas, and I'm sure you could probably brainstorm and come up with a whole lot of others. But I think at this stage of life, because anxiety is one of the issues that women go through, obviously there's a change in physicality often, not all the time, but generally speaking there is. There are feelings of not being loved, things like that. It's really important for us, isn't it, to help our women feel secure and identity in the Lord, in Jesus. And so we might want to address things like issues of loneliness or issues of self-control. So Kelly said she felt like ripping someone's head off. Thanks, Kel, for that very good illustration. But she was self-controlled and she didn't. And so which is great. So menopause is a fact, but it's not an excuse to sin. And so we've got to actually help women, we've got to help each other be self-controlled because that's the fruit of the Spirit. And so if you need to just walk away from a conversation or something, just make sure you do that. I think forgiveness
issues of forgiveness, because I think a number of women that I have spoken to have spoken out of turn, and then they, as Kelly said, they feel really guilty or sad or bad that they've felt that way. So remembering we are forgiven, like we're forgiven in Christ, but it's important that we keep reminding people of the gospel. Self-image, I think we should never, ever have our identity in what we look like, but we are to be women known for our good deeds. And so this morning we talked about we are to do good works and, you know, 1 Peter 3, Proverbs 31. We don't want our self-image to change the way that we see about ourselves. We want to be known for our good deeds. That's how God wants us to be known. So I think that's important. I talked about identity, and I think refuge, think about refuge. Like, I think when there is times of anxiety or loneliness, depression, we have to keep remembering that God actually says he's our refuge and our strength. He's our rock, our salvation. Psalm 121:3, he will not let your foot be moved. And I think we have to keep encouraging women to have confidence in that. Titus, as we looked at this morning, teach and train what is good to young women. I think that's really important. Maybe have some training on menopause as well. And again, men, care for the men, because they need to be cared for, because they might think, who have I married? Like, who is this woman now? She's changed so much. So we need to be caring for the men in our church as well. And then gospel implications, just very finally, I actually think that John says, by this all people will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. I think if we love women well at church going through this, well, any time, but going through this stage, we can actually be countercultural. So the culture says that youth is beautiful and aged are, you know, they're past their use by date. The church says that the elderly are beautiful and that wisdom is to be upheld and is fantastic. And so if we love each other well through this, it's my prayer that actually people are going to be attracted by our love for one another and actually see Jesus in that, rather than see depressed people and people that feel like their day has been finished. So to grow old actually is a great privilege. There are a lot of people that don't grow old, and God has something for each of us to, he has good works for all of us to do. And if we're elderly, then that's a great blessing, and we can be a great blessing to others to pass on wisdom. And so let's love each other well through all the stages of life. And then that's me done.
Thank you for listening to More in the Word, a podcast of More Theological College. Our vision as a college is to see God glorified by men and women living for and proclaiming Jesus Christ, growing healthy churches, and reaching the lost. The Samuel Marsden Archives is the digital repository and archives catalogue of More Theological College and contains materials related to the college, evangelicalism in Australia, and Christian theology extending all the way back to 1651. The archives include manuscripts, books, photographs, and audio recordings by significant people, past and present, digital media and resources produced by the college, and theses by More College students. To find out more, to research a topic, and to explore, head to archives.more.edu.au. That's archives.more.edu.au. It is our hope and prayer that the archives will benefit, edify, and encourage the wider Christian community in Sydney and beyond. You can find out more and register by going to the More College website, more, that's more.edu.au. If you have not already done so, we encourage you to subscribe to our podcast through your favourite podcast platform, so that you'll never miss an episode. For past episodes, further resources, and to make a tax-deductible donation to support the work of the college and its mission, please visit our website at more, that's more.edu.au. If you found this episode helpful, please share it with a friend and leave a review on your platform of choice. We always benefit from feedback from our listeners, so if you'd like to get in touch, you can email us at comms, that's COMMS, at more.edu.au. The More in the Word podcast was edited and produced by me, Karen Bielhartz, and the communications team at More Theological College. The music for our podcast was provided by Mark July from Pixabay. Until next time.